The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email the show. Send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Well, if it seems like you've heard this particular broadcast before, it's because this is now the new normal. Widespread protests and violent rioting following the shooting death of a black man by a police officer. And this time, the police officer was black. But judging by the reaction, evidently, once a black officer puts on the blue uniform, he immediately becomes a white racist. And there you go, reason enough for Charlotte to go up in flames. Reason enough for widespread looting and violence. Lawlessness right across the city. Interstate 85 shut down. The mayor's pleading with the community. Please wait for all the information to be available. You have the governor now declaring a state of emergency. A state of emergency. She's employed the National Guard, State Highway Patrol troopers to help with the local police. You've probably seen footage out there in the riot gear, spraying tear gas, intervening in one case when the so-called protesters wanted to throw a journalist into a bonfire. And so this is carrying on now for two straight nights. And the police chief, too. He's tried to set the record straight about the shooting of Keith Lamont Scott. But no one's listening. At least not in the black community there in Charlotte. No one wants the truth. Here's what the police chief said in, I think this press conference was on Wednesday, if not Wednesday, late Tuesday. Clip one.
Our officers observed a subject, Mr. Keith Lamont Scott, inside a vehicle at the apartment complex. He exited the vehicle armed with a handgun. The officers observed him get back into that vehicle, at which time they approached the vehicle. The officers gave loud, clear, verbal commands, which were also heard by many of the witnesses. They were instructing the subject, once he got out of the vehicle, to drop the weapon. He stepped out, posing a threat to the officers, and Officer Brentley Vinson subsequently fired his weapon, striking the subject. Later on in the evening, early this morning actually, about quarter till two this morning, an additional group of protesters and agitators gathered. They made their way down to Interstate I-85, and they blocked both lanes, northbound and southbound. They broke into the back of a tractor trailer and started setting items on fire. As of right now, we have 16 officers who've been injured. We have multiple police vehicles that have been damaged. And our officers, acting heroically, we're just trying to de-escalate the situation and resolve it as peacefully as possible. It's time to change the narrative, because I can tell you from the facts that the story is a little bit different as to how it's been portrayed so far, especially through social media.
That's the police chief there in Charlotte, Kerr Putney, I guess is how you pronounce his last name, trying to change the narrative from what people have heard, especially on social media. Like this particular clip, this is Lyric Scott, the victim's daughter, and what she said, I believe this was on a live Facebook posting, soon after the shooting.
Didn't have no gun. He wasn't messing with nobody. All he did, them jump out boys, them undercover detectives, they jumped out their truck. They said, hands up. He got a gun. He got a gun. Pow, 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 pow. That's it. He had no gun. So the false reports that you've been given, they need to recant.
Well, and now that it's pretty clear he had a gun and was brandishing this weapon, whether or not he was aiming it at policemen, I guess, remains to be seen. We'll probably find out soon enough. But now there are those rising in his defense saying that, well, the open carry laws allow for him to carry a gun. And so it doesn't matter, really. I think that Facebook posting or that Facebook, whenever it went up live, I think within an hour or two, it had 500,000 views. And then the riots were off and running. That's all they needed. That's all they needed. One young woman, hysterical and understandably so in some respects, but still, what's the truth? Let's get to the truth. This is from the News and Observer from Raleigh regarding the riots from last night. One person was shot at the protest and was taken to the hospital with life-threatening injuries, the medic said. The city initially reported that he died, but later retracted that, saying he was on life support. The shooting was a civilian on civilian, the city tweeted. The Charlotte Police Department did not fire a shot, the city tweeted. However, this is in the same article, the Charlotte Clergy Coalition for Justice questioned the city's account. Well, how can we know they're telling the truth? The coalition said several of its members were just 10 feet away from the victim when he was shot. I saw the man go down on the pavement. Minister Steve, this is from a minister, Steve Knight of Mission Gathering Christian Church in Charlotte, said in a statement from the coalition, it was an ambush. The victim was shot while he stood between two ministers. And we believe he was shot by police. We'd like to see surveillance video from the surrounding area that may have captured the shooting to determine who was responsible for the shooting. Well, you can't say for sure what happened. And maybe there will be surveillance footage. But if the footage comes out and it's determined that it was a civilian-on-civilian shoot, will that tone down the rioters? I mean, how do you answer these kinds of arguments? Black Lives Matter, they've grabbed control of the Democrat Party for sure. And the truth, in the case of this or a number of other events similar to this, the truth doesn't matter. And, well, as far as the other protesters shot, a police conspiracy, or a conspiracy by the city officials. And in the case of the shooting, a police conspiracy, the shooting of Mr. Scott. He didn't have a gun. That was the initial defense. He had a book. He was waving a book, and then out came the signs. It was only a book. You can see the Mike Brown narrative playing out all over again. And yet, in some ways, this one's quite a bit different because everyone involved was black. The Charlotte Observer says this. Keith Lamont Scott, 43, was fatally shot. The officer who shot him, Brentley Vinson, 26, is also black. 16 Charlotte Mecklenburg police officers suffered minor injuries during the chaotic night. That was the first night. And then there was last night when another protester is shot. More looting, more violence. And then it quotes the mayor calling upon people to calm down until more information is available. It says here later, they saw Scott get out of the car, then get back in, Putney said. This is from the police chief's press conference. They saw he had a handgun, approached the car, ordered him to drop the weapon. Despite the commands, he got out of the car with the gun as officers continued to tell him to drop the weapon. And within seconds, Scott was shot. Authorities said Scott posed an imminent threat of danger. And then it mentions the live-streamed video put up by Scott's daughter. And then a section in the middle of the article about Scott, Keith Lamont Scott, 43, being a family man. The father of several children, seven, I think. His mother had talked to him earlier that day. It says some witnesses said they believe the officer who shot Scott was a white man, not a black officer, as police said. He was reading a book, the officer was white. I mean, it all fits right into the narrative. And then when the facts come out, he wasn't reading a book. He had a gun. The officer was black. Everything quiets down in the city of Charlotte, correct? No, that's not what happens. Listen to this. Same piece. A public records search shows that Scott was convicted in April of 2004 of a misdemeanor assault with a deadly weapon charge in Mecklenburg County. Other charges stemming from that date were dismissed. Felony assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, and misdemeanors assault on a child under 12, assault on a female, and communicating threats. In April 2015, in Gaston County Court, Scott was found guilty of driving while intoxicated. In 1992, Scott was charged in Charleston County, South Carolina, with several different crimes on different dates, including carrying a concealed weapon, simple assault, and a contributing to the delinquency of a minor. He pleaded guilty to all charges. Scott also was also charged with aggravated assault in 1992 and assault with intent to kill in 1995. Both charges were reduced, but the disposition of the case is unclear. According to Bexar County, Texas records, Scott was sentenced in March 2005 to 15 months in a state jail for evading arrest. In July of that year, records show he was sentenced to 7 years in prison on a conviction of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. A Texas Department of Criminal Justice spokesman said Scott completed his sentence and was released from prison in 2011. So that's the rap sheet for the family man. And this article, by the way, tucks all of this information right near the end. This is what we didn't find out in the family man section. It came along later. And really, well, you have to give the Charlotte newspaper some credit, because they also ran a feature on the black officer. That's the rap sheet for Keith Lamont Scott. What about Brentley Vinson? This young man, 26 years old. He's been in the police force now for a couple of years. Grew up in Charlotte. Football star in high school. He dreamed of becoming a police officer, just like his father. He wanted to follow in his father's footsteps. Powerline, commenting on the Charlotte Observer feature on Vinson, says Vinson was all conference in football as a high school junior, but was unable to play during his senior year due to a serious knee injury. The next year, he played at a prep school, earning a scholarship to Liberty University. At Liberty, Vinson studied criminal justice. He became a captain of the football team and led it in tackles as a senior in 2012. In 2014, Vinson joined the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Force. He's not been subject to any disciplinary action, according to personnel records released by the police department. What kind of guy is Vinson? His middle school football coach said this about him. I thought when he became a police officer like his dad, that it was a perfect fit for him. I've watched this kid work his tail off from an early age. He's a phenomenal kid and happens to be in an unfortunate situation right now, and I hate to see him be in the middle of it and being vilified the way he is. He's being vilified. He's the bad guy. Well, along with whites in general, as we'll see here in just a second. Vincent's high school football coach was equally effusive. He says that after Vincent returned to Charlotte, he would often ask his former star to come and speak to his players. At one point, Vincent mentored a player who had suffered a knee injury similar to the one that kept Vincent off the field his senior year. The coach concluded, "We need more Brent Vincents. That type of person in our communities. He's a natural leader and one of those guys who always had the best interest of others before himself. We need more of these individuals. We need more Brentley Vincents. He's a natural leader. He has the interest of others before himself. And now he's the villain." Of course, this reputation, obviously, it doesn't guarantee that he would never make a mistake. But who has more credibility here? What about the black police chief as well? Where are the people rising in defense of these upstanding, leading black voices, black leaders? As it is, the victim here is the 43-year-old family man with a rap sheet that just goes on and on and on. It's not to say that Vincent couldn't have made a mistake the other night. But in looking at his record and considering what the police chief said, well, what do you think the facts are? But that's not going to stop the movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, from stirring up hatred and division, from turning up in the streets to loot, to commit acts of violence. Hillary Clinton, she tweeted after this case and then the one in Tulsa last Friday where that, at least at this point, would appear to be maybe excessive force, but we'll find out more on that case. It's too early to tell. There's only so much you see from a video that lasts for a few seconds. But that didn't stop Hillary Clinton from tweeting, "Keith Lamont Scott, Terrence Crutcher, he's the victim in Tulsa. Too many others," she said. This has to end. This has to end. She said on a radio show, I believe this was Tuesday, and the comment is in response primarily to the incident in Tulsa. But here's what she had to say on a radio program Tuesday.
"And we've got to tackle systemic racism, this horrible shooting again. How many times do we have to see this in our country? In Tulsa, an unarmed man with his hands in the air? I mean, this is just unbearable, and it needs to be intolerable. And so, you know, maybe I can, by speaking directly to white people, say, look, this is not who we are. We've got to do everything possible to improve policing, to go right at implicit bias."
So she can speak for, or directly to, white people. The problem is with the white people, through and through. That's what we keep hearing. This is switching back to what happened in Charlotte. This is what the victim's brother had to say. I believe this was in an exchange he had with a reporter.
"Guys, is there anything we should know?
No. You just know that all white people are devils.
And make sure you air that one.
Air
that. Yeah, don't take that.
All white cops, devils, and white people."
So all the white policemen, the brother says, and all white people, period, are devils. Here you have a black victim with a long rap sheet, an upstanding black police officer, a black police chief, begging for the community, the black community, to believe the police force's narrative. You have black rioters all over the city. Added to that, you have a black president leading the United States of America. You have a black woman heading up the Justice Department and the whites are the racist devils. How come there hasn't been any strong voices of rebuke for someone to even get away with saying what you just heard? He says it, reporters urge him to say it, and then we carry on following the narrative that's built upon lies. My father wrote in this article we keep referring to, for obvious reasons, Police Under Attack from last year. It would be overstating it to say there's no racism among America's law enforcement officers, but there are some few people who are scrutinizing and magnifying this issue for evil purposes. That's what you're seeing play out in Charlotte. And if there was any criminal behavior in the case in Tulsa, even as far gone as America is, morally and spiritually, one would think that woman's going to be prosecuted. But leaving that aside, over and again, we're seeing people who are scrutinizing and magnifying these issues for evil purposes and lying about it. He says they're using it dishonestly to explain or excuse some terrifyingly dangerous behavior. They're stirring up emotion and anger, but none of it is truly intended to solve the problem. He wrote that the results are inciting evils that are quickly becoming far worse than those they purport to solve. The nation's police are being undermined in ways that will prove devastating to our cities in particular. Look at what's happening now in the world of sports. I mean, the momentum is building here. The momentum of this Black Lives Matter movement. And you have more and more sports stars, more and more celebrities that are right on board with it, disrespecting, dishonoring the flag or the national anthem. No big deal. Hey, we've got a message to get out there. And now in the minds of those few protesters, what happened in Charlotte only confirms in their minds what they've protested about. It's just only going to get worse. That's the thing. It's going to get worse. That's what your Bible prophesies. That's what my father was talking about last year in the Police Under Attack article. More and more police officers coming forward, police chiefs saying they've never seen it like this in their lifetimes. It's never been this bad. The animosity, the hatred toward an entire police force. And I won't take the time here to go through what we've covered before about what the actual statistics are nationally. But you can get to those facts. If you're serious about getting to the truth of the matter, what I'll focus on here instead is what your Bible has to say about what's coming. Isaiah 59:4 says, For your hands are defiled with blood and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue has muttered perverseness. None calls for justice, nor any pleads for truth. Well, people are calling for justice, but it's their own perverted sense of what justice is. In their minds, it's vengeance. Vengeance. That's what they want. The truth doesn't matter. As Isaiah said, they trust in vanity and speak lies. It's all about vanity. It's all about lies. It's interesting. I mean, this has nothing to do with race, but in the other, in a forum I gave to the college students and students at the academy the other day, I was just going through and showing how the founding fathers of America, these 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence, I referred back to that classic Paul Harvey monologue. We'll play that one of these days on the radio. But this classic monologue where he talks about just how much those individuals, those founders, were willing to sacrifice for each other and for the good of the country, sacrificing their lives, their honor. Read it there for yourself. Go online and get the Declaration of Independence and see how they conclude that masterful document. And what a difference. As Paul Harvey brought out, most of those men were rich and wealthy and enjoying a lot of comforts that the middle class didn't enjoy, and yet they sacrificed, in some cases, they sacrificed everything for the good of the nation, for the good of the country. And it's just so different from the spirit that you see today, where these kinds of social problems are just ripping apart the United States, right at the seams. Everything's beginning to unravel. Those taking a knee during those football games, I mean, at what point in this struggle, the way they see it, at what point are they then satisfied and say, okay, I think it's all improved. I think I'm ready to stand for the national anthem again. Do you see that coming in the near future? Momentum is building. The spirit of vanity and lies and injustice, mischief, iniquity. Isaiah 28:15 says, we've made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves. We seek refuge in lies. He had his hands up. He was saying, don't shoot. He was walking away from the police officer. He was waiting on his boy. He was a family man. He was just reading a book. Hosea 4:1 also. It says God has a controversy with us because there's no truth. There's no truth nor knowledge of God in the land. We've talked a lot about Revelation 12 and the fact that Satan's been cast down to this earth. He's confined to this earth. Do you see Satan stirring up anger and hatred and division? You see it everywhere. Charlotte's not the only place. You see this resentment, this bitterness, this hatred and division. He's the prince of the power of the air. He's the father of lies. It says, you shall know the truth. In John 8, it says, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. But how many people really want? How many people even want the truth, let alone know it? My father, in that Police Under Attack piece, he said, how much value do you put on truth? This is not a time to be ruled by emotions. We need to be ruled by the truth of God. It's not a time to be ruled by emotions. As someone said recently, I forget who it was, facts don't care about emotions. What are the facts? It's understandable that a family member would react emotionally, but that the news media would be stirring it up, and that politicians would be pandering to minority groups in order to get votes, as opposed to seeking truth. That's a dangerous mix. That says to us, we're being ruled by emotions in the United States. How much value do you put on truth? Isaiah, to stick in this book, going back to chapter 1, verse 4 says, ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers. Children are corruptors, it says. They've forsaken the eternal. They've provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward. Why should you be stricken any more? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick. The whole heart is faint. There's just a sickness here from head to toe. Even among the leadership, prominent leaders, black and white, that are out there deliberately fueling these grievances, doing it for their own political gain, using race as a weapon, using race and lies and dishonesty as a weapon. This is a dangerous and toxic mix. In Isaiah 3, you're probably familiar with this passage where it talks about what God takes away from our nations. Righteous leadership. The man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, the ancient, the captain of 50. And here again, even an upstanding citizen who's dreamt of following in his father's footsteps to be a police officer. Even someone like that can make a mistake. We've all made mistakes. Sometimes tragic mistakes. But for this young man, 26 years old, to immediately become the villain, even as the facts begin to emerge, and the people from his own community disregarding those facts, and then lumping all of the white community in with him. Where is this leading? What kind of an explosion in race hatred and violence are we heading toward? Well, verse 4 of Isaiah 3 says, "Children, I'll give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them." And verse 12 says, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. Oh, my people, they which lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths." So curses are setting in. And if you can't see that yet, then your eyes aren't quite wide open. I know there's leaders, there's politicians out there saying that they can solve all of these problems. But there's a sickness here, as Isaiah 1 brings out. The whole head is sick. Verse 6 of Isaiah 1 says, "From the sole of your foot, even unto the head, there's no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. Your country's desolate," verse 7 says. "Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers, devour it in your presence. And it's desolate, as overthrown by strangers." I mean, that's a terrifying passage. And it applies to today. It applies to our day, to our people. And that's the real problem here. I mean, there's a sickness in the head as well. The leaders certainly share in the blame. They're a large part of it. But the sickness runs through and through, from the head through to the toe. Isaiah goes on and talks about our society becoming like Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah. Look at verses 9 and 10. Well, when you look at what God prophesies, one-third of the Bible is prophecy, by the way. And so he lays it out there for us, this sure word of prophecy, and we can know where this is headed. And because of Isaiah 1, verse 7, Ezekiel 5, we've gone through this a number of times. Like I say, it's beginning to sound like a broken record. But it's because of these prophecies and others that Herbert Armstrong and my father, then years later, could hit the nail right on the head with respect to race relations and where we're headed. Mr. Armstrong wrote back in 19, 68. He said, look now at these sudden emotional flare-ups of student revolt and race consciousness, prejudice, resentments, and hatreds. Why the sudden inflaming of student rebellion? Why have both exploded in violence? He went on to say that the underlying cause is human nature. Human nature. That's in 68. Now Satan's been cast down. This is going to get a lot worse before it ever gets better. And yet even in the 60s, Mr. Armstrong said race war is coming. He said racial tensions, passions, and hatreds are being deliberately stirred by organized planning. They're being stirred up. Here's the white reporter out there saying, hey, hey, do you have anything you want to say? Do you have anything you want to tell the world? Well, yes, I do. White policemen and white people are devils. They are demons. They are the problem. It's all being deliberately stirred up by organized planning, and it's about to explode. Back in 2008, when Senator Obama was just being praised right and left for being the one who would heal America's racial divide. And yet here we are in 2016, and it's certainly worse than it's been in my lifetime. My father wrote back in 2008, by the way, many people believe that Mr. Obama is going to greatly improve race relations, but our racial problems are going to rapidly get much worse. Rapidly, he said. He said later that the race card is going to be played often for political gain. And then more recently, I mean, that's what he said in 2008 before Mr. Obama even came into office, before he was even elected. More recently, July 2015, he said the effect of responding to lawlessness by handcuffing law enforcement is dangerous. It's certain to add fuel to the fire that's burning cities like Baltimore. Well, it was Baltimore last year, and now it's moved on to Charlotte. And where is it ultimately leading? Well, go back and look at that article, July 2015. Your cities are burned with fire. And also the one, police under attack from that same time period. I'm not sure if it's the same issue or one very near to it. But both of them from the middle of July or around July 2015. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
My father just completed a new coworker letter from, this week, September 19th was the date on the draft that I previewed the other night. And he says in this letter, "I believe more Americans than ever can see that this nation's problems are not going to be solved by a presidential election. Anyone who's looking at the situation honestly can see that neither of these presidential candidates has the ability to rescue America from its serious problems. Certainly other nations can see it." That's something we want to stop and consider here as well. You see all the turmoil in America's cities, and think for a moment, what must other nations be thinking? What must other leaders in other nations be thinking? He says the United States has truly become a spectacle to the world. Foreign leaders are treating America with a contempt never before experienced by this country. The scandals, insults, and gaffes should be a source of embarrassment to all of us. Still, it seems that each week another, even worse one occurs. It should be more clear and clear that it should be more and more clear that America is suffering from curses. The problems are not just the result of one president's bad policies. They're the result of God being against America because of its rebellion and sin. It's not something that any single person can fix. He says, finally, what will happen in America over the next couple months? Talking about the 2 months leading up to the election, he mentions how Hillary Clinton is beleaguered by legal trouble, and she has health problems, evidently. And then there's Donald Trump. So many Americans who are so intensely hostile to the prospect of Trump becoming president. He says if he were to win the election, we could see major social unrest in response. Does anyone doubt that? And looking at what it takes for a city to go up in flames, and seeing how the vast majority, in some cases, can just utterly disregard the facts or the truth, and a city goes up in flames. Is that a far out forecast of what might could happen in these next few months? My father says, whoever wins, I believe the possibility is high that a spark could ignite this nation in violence. I also believe there's a lot of evidence that some people actually want such an outcome and plan to use it as a pretext for assuming greater power. We all need to be spiritually vigilant in the coming months, he concludes. Yes, indeed. We need vigilance. We need to be spiritually vigilant, given the times that we're in. In the coworker letter he wrote a few months ago, he talked about the foundations of this earth being out of course, referring to the terrorist strikes, the refugee crisis in Europe, the aggressiveness and belligerence of Russia and China, the global economy. I have a piece here from the UN. That's talking about the worst of it, the economy, that is, yet to come. And then the political campaign in the U.S., dividing the nation all the more. And then the prophecies, Isaiah 1:7 and Ezekiel 5, the prophecies about burning and riotous, out-of-control cities. And all the racial tension that's building in the United States in particular. Look back just at this year. I know I've gone through part of this list before a few months ago, and I had to update it this morning. Starting with the attacks in Germany, Cologne, January the 1st. Hundreds and hundreds of sexual assaults brought on by the nonstop flow of migrants. And then the days leading up to the shameful nuclear deal with Iran. Iran humiliating the United States, seizing those two U.S. Navy patrol boats. Then the nuclear deal on January the 16th, officially coronating Iran as the King of the South, you could say. And that, of course, being one of the signature prophecies of my father. You can read the Key of, or rather, the King of the South booklet. My father has since called that, what happened on January 16th, the worst foreign policy blunder in American history. And it happened on the 16th. On the 17th, we now know you had the ransom for hostages swap. $400 million in cash, unmarked bills, that went to Tehran in exchange for the hostages. And then that cash, no doubt, as it spread out to Iran's terrorist proxies in Syria, in Lebanon, in Gaza. The United States, of all nations, funding terrorism. In February, you had the biggest televised event of the year, the Super Bowl, and Beyoncé there singing alongside her dancers, the Black Panthers. The Black Panthers, Super Bowl entertainment, and now we have all these football players kneeling or sitting during the national anthem of the United States of America, the freest, most prosperous nation in the history of the world. The elections in Germany, March 15th, Super Sunday elections, they're called. The rise of the AfD, Alternative for Deutschland Party. 24% of the vote in Saxony-Anhalt. Pretty amazing. It's the best result of any German populist group since 1945. That same month, March 2016, President Obama normalizes relations with, well, essentially with the Castro regime in Cuba, because it hasn't made life any better for the average, everyday Cuban. It's made life worse for Cubans. It's empowered the Castros. And because of that, Cuba's still a threat, a greater threat now to the United States. Toward the end of March, you had the terrorist attack in Brussels, Belgium. In April, Mr. Obama was here in the UK telling the Brits that, well, if they didn't stay in the EU, they might have to go to the back of the trade line. May 5th. I keep coming back to that one. What a whopper it turned out to be. The White House admitting that the Iran nuke deal was based on a massive lie, a false narrative. And then the White House, Ben Rhodes anyway, bragging about creating this fictitious narrative in order to win support for the deal. And basically saying how stupid reporters are and how easy it is to manipulate them. And really, no one to speak of in the world of major media was all that upset about it. I mean, if Trump has a press conference and fools them into thinking he's going to have a long statement and it's only a short one, they're outraged. They got played. Well, the fact is, everyone in the major media was played on this Iran nuke deal. But there's no outrage. In May, also, Germany announced that its army would expand. This is the first time since the end of the Cold War. Austria had the election where the far-right candidate was within 0.2% of winning. President Obama pretty much apologized to Japan for what happened at the end of World War II in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That was May 27th. June 12th, Islamist terrorist attack in Orlando, Florida. 49 people massacred. June 23rd, Britain pulls out of the EU. Something Mr. Armstrong had forecasted in 1956. Britain will be no part of it. 1956. July 7th. 5 policemen in Dallas murdered. Murdered by a Black Lives Matter terrorist. It was the worst attack on law enforcement since 9/11. The worst since 9/11. Also on July 7th, and I didn't even realize this one happened until recently, all those U.S. diplomats that were ambushed in South Sudan, coming back from dinner, heading to the U.S. embassy by the presidential palace in South Sudan, ambushed by government forces that the United States is there to prop up, that the United States is there to fund. Well, in July, we also saw the release of the German White Paper, its new paper on defense, where German leaders and planners are calling for Germany to assume leadership globally, to actually shape the world order. To shape the world order. What a shift. Major shift. The news media in Europe and Britain reported a major shift. Well, the day after that white paper was released, another radical Islamist attack on Nice in France, southern France. The day after that, an attempted military coup in Turkey. And as it turns out, the Turkish strongman, Erdogan, he crushed the rebellion and became all the more autocratic as a result. That same month, mid to late July, you had Germany's Week of Terror, the 17-year-old Afghan refugee that wounded 4 people on the train, the 18-year-old German-Iranian that killed 9 people at a shopping center, the 21-year-old Syrian asylum seeker who used a machete to kill a pregnant woman. All of this prompted Spiegel on July 25th to ask, has the world gone mad? What has happened to this world? Has it gone mad? And the next day, 2 Islamic State soldiers kill a priest in his 80s, northern France. Turkey invaded Syria in August. In September, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, her party went through a humiliating third-place defeat in Ms. Merkel's home state. And then more recently, you have the Berlin elections on Sunday. Before that, North Korea, carrying out its 5th nuclear test, a miniaturized nuclear bomb. The terrorist attacks last weekend in the United States, New York, New Jersey, Minnesota. And then the last couple of days, Charlotte going up in flames. And over the last couple of weeks, all of the statements coming out of Europe that we've been covering on this program. Juncker's statement that we're going to go forward with this European army. We're going to build a European army. And then the German political crisis, which we talked about on yesterday's program. Brad McDonald spoke about it on Trumpet Hour yesterday as well. This is just 2016. Jesus said in Luke 21, take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares, for as a snare as a snare. It shall come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. It's going to impact everyone on earth, Jesus said. Everyone. Don't get caught up in riotous living or the cares of this life. All of this is coming upon us suddenly. Simplify your life. Keep the focus on the spiritual, like my father said in that coworker letter. To quote Jesus here in this passage, Luke 21:36, watch you therefore, and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man. God says to watch. God says to pray. Pray always. We've got to be watching, zealously watching and praying. Otherwise, we're not going to be ready for Christ's return. We're going to be caught unawares. We're going to be caught sleeping. And yet, if we're watching this way, the way Christ admonishes us to in Luke 21, then we're going to see all of these prophecies being fulfilled. We're going to see how dramatic these events truly are, and that we're that much closer to the return of Jesus Christ. Backing up to verse 28 here in Luke 21, it says, and when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draws near. That's what it all leads right into. These many prophesied events, now occurring in our lifetimes. It culminates, these events culminate in the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us. Send those comments, please, to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.